MC.
Yes.
Right. Well, first and foremost, you know, you guys thank all of us for coming out here, but I want to thank Enrico, Danny, Carrie, and Kristen for having all of us here. It truly is a pleasure. Real quick, I was here in Montevideo, and someone said earlier, it's just amazing what you're done with the place. So, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I want Erica. Actually, we're gonna do introductions first. You guys want to go around and just introduce yourselves?
And mayor, potentially elected.
Recently declared candidate.
Yes, there you go. That's right. Enrico Palmerino, Dam and Defense.
Erica Hall, Storm Squad.
And my name is Christian with VIP Adjusting, your public adjuster.
And the first question is for Erica specifically, although Councilor Gabbard is quite familiar with the program and app, so she can add to it too. But Storm Squad, it was formed right before her campaign.
No, it's been around well before that. So probably late 2020, 2021. With Ian and Adalia and Debbie and everything that came, that's when USF kind of started collecting the data and the research that showed us in 2030 which neighborhoods would be close to being completely submerged underwater.
So what was the latest version of the app that came out shortly before me?
Updated and upgraded with new technology, new data. Councilmember Gabbard was very supportive in helping us with the cameras and, you know, all the technology that we put in neighborhoods in order to, as you saw when we presented at the HERS committee, how we were able to keep up with real-time data as storms and as flooding was happening. So it's an amazing piece of a platform.
And so that was my main question. What, you know, with that real-time community data and reporting, what was that able to provide above and beyond, like, you know, typical systems that are already out?
What we saw in real time was a completely different map than what official systems were showing. We saw flooding happening outside of designated flood zones. We saw streets becoming impassable before alerts went out. We saw clusters of impact in neighborhoods that historically deal with disinvestment. But what we also saw was community data moving faster because it was coming from people experiencing it in real time. What it revealed is that our current systems are reactive and often lag behind what's actually happening on the ground. So in my opinion, if we're only relying on official data, we're already behind the storm.
Is there anything you wanted to add as far as the benefits to
the system? Well, I think that one of the important pieces about the Storm Squad and the work that USFCP is doing is that it is about what people are seeing on the ground versus what the city capability is, or even meteorologists and, you know, public information's ability to be able to get that data out. Community is really a very important piece of resiliency work, because when the community comes together and they share information as to what they are seeing, that information becomes power for communities to be able to respond in a much different way. One of the things that we've been asked about at the city is it possible to be able to create some sort of app that people might be at work and a major storm, or like a rainstorm, just a rain event comes, but they know that their streets flood. How do I know if this rain event has caused my street to flood, and will I be able to get home? Well, at the city, we kind of look at each other like, well, I don't really know how we could create that. That is the kind of real-time data that the Storm Squad and USFCP are creating in these apps. And I believe there's some QR codes around where you can all hit that and get that app directly. And that is a way that you would be able to go on, if there's a camera in your neighborhood, you would be able to see in real time if those streets are flooded or impassable, And that kind of information is invaluable. It protects property, it protects your cars, it can protect your life. And so those are the ways that the community involvement and information really helps to backfill what the city is capable of doing.
Excellent.
All right, this question is primarily for Christian. So many homeowners don't know their flood zone. They don't know if they have flood insurance or they assume their homeowners insurance covers it. You know, what do you think is urgently important for homeowners to understand before the next hurricane season begins?
Absolutely. Well, I think the most important thing a home and a business owner can do is get their ducks in a row, you know, locate your insurance policy. Do what you can, talk with your agent, try to understand, you know, what your policy covers, and just as importantly, what your policy doesn't cover. I think a big issue that we experienced in our area is we hadn't really experienced a lot of events to this capacity. So everyone thought, oh, well, it's not going to hit us, it's not going to happen to us. And I think that what this event showed us is that it absolutely can happen to us in our area. And the best thing that a homeowner or business owner can do is to get all those documents in order, organized. If you experience a flood, your flood documents may be in the home and they may actually be damaged. And those types of things are hard to locate after disaster occurs. So that would be my recommendation, second to installing a system that can actually protect your home if and when those events do occur. Understanding your policy and getting those things organized is definitely a top priority.
Real quick, does the state offer any kind of reimbursements or incentives to install flood prevention devices?
Not currently, but my understanding is there's legislature and other things happening, both in potentially loan forgiveness programs, like low interest rate programs, and then the possibility for state-backed purchasing rebates and insurance-based discounts on premiums that are all in the works. We'll see how long it takes for those things to come about. As you know, anything that's government oriented or in the insurance industry is going to usually take time and a while. Obviously, everyone's looking at it from a how much devastation and destruction is caused, and for a small investment in something like a flood barrier can drastically limit or reduce that devastation. It helps communities at large. It helps individuals. You saw all the material items and property out on everyone's front lawn. Just if you think about what that's doing to our landfills, what that's doing to the environment, the need for more consumption of rare minerals and resources, it's in everyone's best interest to try to mitigate and prevent anything like that from happening again. And we're the first ones to say, like, we can't guarantee you're not going to get any water in your home, but what we can do is help drastically reduce the amount of water that could or would find its way in your home. And in many cases, that means a dry home. And even if not dry, that means the amount of damage that's caused by the water is drastically inhibited and limited. So it's really important that I think the city and other programs come together to try to encourage and incentivize more and more homeowners to put systems like this in place.
If I could just add to your point, Christian, one of the things that we've learned is the biggest misconception is that if you're not in the flood zone, you're safe. And that's just not true anymore, right? We know that. The second is insurance. Most people don't realize standard homeowners insurance does not cover flooding. And the third is timing, right? You can't wait until a storm is named to prepare. By then, it's already too late to get coverage or to make meaningful changes. So one of the things we find in the community is preparedness is a financial decision, a safety decision, and honestly, a survival decision at this point.
And I would just add, I think this is all such a great piece of the information and the education that we have to get out to residents, because let's just be honest, X is a flood zone. When you talk to FEMA, they will tell you an X zone is a flood zone. The only difference is that your lending institution may not require you to have flood insurance. That doesn't mean you shouldn't have it. Look at all of the people who live in the interior of our city who flooded during Melton. All of them have flood damage that came from water rising into their homes, but so many of them did not have flood insurance because their mortgage company didn't make them do it. Everyone in our community needs to take seriously the need for insurance, because a more insured community recovers faster and has the ability to be able to be more resilient at the end of the day. So I preach this all the time about next being a flood zone. I joke that I'm going to get it like tattooed one day, because that I think would be the number one thing if we could get that message out. And if you're in a next flood zone, your flood insurance policy is pretty inexpensive. The other thing is making sure that you have that contents insurance. Talking about all of the things that are in our house. Well, if you just have dwelling coverage and you don't have contents coverage, nothing that is inside the house, and that could include appliances, it could include cabinetry, flooring, it's only going to ensure the bare minimum of the structure and not what is inside. And so the number of people we've seen that have been able to rebuild their house and then you walk into it and it's empty because they can't replace the things, that is equally important. And then the last thing that I would share is that all of this, even today, us sitting here educating people, talking about this, all of this goes into the city's CRS rating. That is our community rating system. The community rating system is what gives the ability for us to have our residents insured by FEMA, the National Flood Insurance Program. And because we go through that and we do an audit on that every single year, we actually can give discounts to our residents on their flood policies. So right now, if you have a flood policy through the National Flood Insurance Program, you're getting a 25% discount because your city does things just like this. We promote resiliency. We do education. We work to harden our own facilities. So the more of this that we can do, the better educated we are, the more insured we are, the more able to recover and respond we'll be able to be.
On the insurance side of the equation, three important points. One, to what Christian was saying, who here has a go bag if there is a hurricane? Anyone have that prepared? Who in your go bag has your insurance policy and pictures of different rooms, possessions, property included?
It's on my Google
Drive, but yes. So number one, if you don't have that created, that go bag, get it created. Make sure you know what's covered in your policy. Make sure you get the policy that you need to cover and protect your property, and make sure you have photos of it and receipts of any of the more expensive items ready to go. Number two, from an insurance standpoint, so we were talking about insurance discounts. I look at damage defense as an insurance policy. I mean, to me, it's a one-time cost. Like, there's not a lot of insurance policies you can buy one time and keep for a lifetime. So find an insurance policy, whether it's a material item that you can use to prevent, dam, protect your home. Or two, also talk to your insurance providers about flood mitigation devices and seeing if you can get a discount. Now, we've contacted every insurance provider that offers insurance in the state of Florida. There is one insurance provider, Lux Insurance, that offers a 5% discount exclusive to Dammit Defense's product only. So if you are using or a customer here of Dammit Defense, I'd highly encourage you to give them a call and just see where they come in. We there's no kickbacks, no money exchange, just I'd say like a promotional could be good for you if you want to check it out. And then the third thing on from an insurance and protection standpoint is putting together an appropriate emergency evacuation flood plan. So raise your hands if you have an emergency flood plan in place. Okay. If you don't, you can scan. We've got a QR code. It's going to be up on one of these slides. Also, just hit up any of the people here. We're happy to provide you one. It's basically a way for you to look at your property, first assess where water can come in first and fastest, so you know what areas are going to be the most exposed. You're going to have your emergency contacts that need to be that you might need to ring or call, communicate with. And then you're going to have your plan for what to do at different stages of flooding. So, you know, maybe the streets are totally dry, but there's a propensity of flood. Here's what we're going to do. If you start to have the streets are getting flooded or the alerts are happening, here's where we're going to go. We're going to stay at this hotel. If it's looking like there's a 9-foot surge. Okay, that's a totally different flood plan that we should be looking at. And if you don't have to do that last minute when you're stressed or like the anxiety is hitting you, and you can just reference a playbook with plan A, plan B, and plan C, and who you need to call and when, and what you need to grab. Because I can tell you, when we were running out of our home, trying to remember all the things we needed to grab and the possessions, and I'll tell you this, the one thing you can't insure against, and the thing that I was most upset about losing, was my kids' paintings. Like the kids' photos and paintings that we lost because we were still moving into our home and they were in boxes and they got destroyed. So don't forget to take the non-valuable possessions out that you may be more sorrowful losing than, you know, frankly, any sort of like diamond or jewelry that could be replaced. So yeah, that's my question.
Okay, so I feel like the next question overlaps with a lot of what was just said, but is there anything, and try to be quick too, sorry to rush, but I want to make sure we're doing it here on time. We have a few more questions I'm going to get to. So that being said, is there anything, you know, what can residents and business owners realistically do in the next 30 days, or I guess they have a couple months until, you know, storm season, but, you know, what can people do to help reduce their chances of flooding in the near term?
Well, I'll start. Both you all mentioned it. Understand your actual flood risk, not just FEMA maps, but your neighborhood history. The beautiful thing about St. Pete, there's so many neighborhoods with so much incredible history, and people just moved in and never really learned what the history of those neighborhoods are, including flooding and various things. So know your neighborhood history. Again, like everyone said, get flood insurance if you can, and understand the waiting period. Physically prepare your space, like you said. Elevate valuables, seal entry points. Thank goodness for my husband here. He sealed our points when Helene came. So when Milton came, the water came up so high, but he had already sealed those points when Helene came. So thank God that he did that. Think about water flow around your home. And just as important to your point, build a plan with people. Know who you're checking on, who's checking on you, and how you communicate. And that's what the Storm Squad does, neighbors helping neighbors. In each one of our 6 neighborhoods, we have ambassadors. And those ambassadors know their neighbors. They know that Miss Ava's 90 with the cat and takes certain medication. And certain things have to be refrigerated. So when Helene and Milton came and some of our team members were out in the neighborhoods uploading photos that you all saw and were able to respond in real time to those flood information, and it saved people. It really helped save time and it saved people. So by the time BOAG came, you know, and the long-term emergency management, FEMA, and Pinellas County Emergency Management, we were already on the ground and we gave them a playbook as to what was happening in each neighborhood. So again, your neighbors should be the number one team that you build around, because preparedness isn't just about your house. It's also about your network and it's about your community.
Great self-reflection.
Absolutely. And just to further echo what everyone on the panel has said, readiness is the best thing you can do, is prepare yourself for these events before they occur. One thing I briefly wanted to touch on that most individuals are not aware of, the standard NFIP policy does not typically have coverage for what's known as loss of use. That's money for you to live elsewhere while your home is substantially damaged. So even preparing a possible means of a place to stay in the event your home does experience flooding, those are some very important elements, and further the reason why it's so important to understand what your policy covers. The flood insurance policy is far different than your standard homeowner's policy, and there are other options available, such as privatized flood insurance that may offer some of those coverages. So I would push the understanding the policy and what is covered. Of course, your family's safety should be the number one most important aspect, but those are just a couple of options for you.
And I don't want to miss on just making sure we do a public service announcement for our storm drains.
Yes.
your storm drains on your streets clear. This is so important. How many times you drive down the street, there's a lawn company, and they're just blowing it out into the street, blowing it into, you know, the storm drains, because they just think, oh, it's just like a catch area, right? Well, all of that backs up and goes. I mean, all of that flows out to the bay or out to the Gulf. And, I mean, if that is clogged, then what's going to happen when a major rain event comes? It's all just going to come up in the streets. And so making sure that you're keeping that clear, you're making sure that you're keeping your gutters clear, you're making sure that you can divert water away from your home as much as possible. Now, as you mentioned earlier, there's no guarantee when that 6, 7, 15-foot storm surge comes, it's going to be really hard to keep water out of homes. We know that. But what we can do is we can be more proactive on those more minimal storms, and especially on those rainy day events, because we have seen that sometimes those really, and the storm squad, that was one of the events that I first knew about with your work, was the storm that came on like a random September day, even before Helene. And it was the storm squad that was reporting that these streets were flooding before people even knew that there were areas that could flood within the interior of our city. Mm-hmm. So making sure that we're doing all of that and just being good neighbors and good stewards to make sure that we're not adding to the problem.
And then just a few quick tactical things. So leave this event, get water, packaged food, propane, and gas. Now, not when people are talking about a hurricane. That's the first thing you can do. Second thing, when we start to get to deeper into hurricane season, start to look at the furniture and the possessions you have outside. Minimalistic is better with where we live in Florida, because otherwise you're gonna be bringing that all in and out, in and out, in and out. Bring, if a hurricane's on its way, bring in what you can. Those are all debris and hazards that can smash through glass and through doors and windows. Tie it down if you can't lift it or move it in. So make sure you have plenty of string on hand or rope to tie things down. Elevate interior. So it doesn't take a lot. You can buy, there are these little plastic risers that you can use for beds. Do that for tables. Anything that's valuable, put it up on those. Inches matter in this space, and time matters. All you have to do is keep water out of your home for a matter of hours, not days in most cases, because the water will recede. And the hours is what's going to kill you. Taping your doors and windows, not to stay, but to do so and leave, evacuate, and find another place. So like none of the things I'm encouraging are encouraging anyone to stay in your home when a hurricane comes. If you have a dammit defense system, it is not a pass to stay home. That is a pass to keep things as dry as possible and to protect assets, not lives. If you barricade yourself in your home, you're asking for trouble. That's why I would say tape, silicone. If you're not going to buy a system, tape and silicone can go a long way. It doesn't need to be perfect. You just need to be buying yourself time. And then you need to look at if there are other barricades that you can use. Plywood, you should be putting that on windows. Because if those break, water now has a free and clear entryway into your home. Vehicles, you should not be keeping them in garages or on your street. Move them to raised parking garages and do so days before a hurricane happens. I can tell you, I made the mistake with Helene. Historically, the last few, I had moved vehicles into a garage many days before. Helene, I was like, oh, I'm gonna do it tomorrow. Tomorrow, there was 6 inches of water already on the street and I wasn't able to get the vehicles to where I needed to go, and then we lost both vehicles. We had a boat on top of one of them. So do these things proactively. It can make a world of a difference. And then, like I said, put anything that's valuable, even just putting it in plastic containers and bins. Not very expensive. Put them in bins and put them up on a shelf. So go through, if you know, like I said, the pictures, picture frame. Just clear all countertops, cabinets, you name it, with pictures. Throw them into a plastic bin. You can put them back up later and put that on a top shelf. Make sure it's covered. That's the difference between everyone's valuable possessions or priceless possessions being destroyed versus being there for you when you return.
Really good stuff. Okay, I'm going to start with Councilmember Gabbard on this. So in light of Hurricane Helene and Melton, you know, what do you expect over the next 10 years in regards to flooding frequency and severity? And
Do you think our infrastructure is built to withstand that? And if not, what is the deal? It's a trick question, right? Okay, well, we'll start with the easy part of that. No, our infrastructure is not built to withstand what we are going, what we have seen, and what we are going to see over the next 10 years. It just isn't. We have a $700 million, almost $1 billion by the time it's all laid out, stormwater master plan that we have to implement 5 years ago. And so, are we prepared? No. Can we get prepared? Yes. I very strongly believe that there is a way in which we as the city will be able to prioritize our infrastructure. There is some very simple math that can be done that is actually very deep within our stormwater plan right now that does an equation on a return on investment for the money that we are spending on these projects. And what is that return on investment? It is the number of homes that we are able to move out of the stormwater floodplain. So there's a difference. There's the FEMA flood maps, and then there is the stormwater floodplain. If you do not know where you lie within the stormwater floodplain, go to safepeak.org/flooding. We have created an entirely different mapping system. You can put your address in there. And it is scary how much it replicates pretty much what we saw in Helene.
Yep.
Up to where it came to my property, I know when I look at that map, that is what they're predicting with that level of storm surge, it should have come onto my property. And so now we have these tools, we have more power, but we have to know where that risk is. And if we're talking about doing $25 million project here or a $25 million project here, but we know we can affect 4 homes over here and 2 businesses, but we might affect 100 homes over here, where should we be investing that money? Well, we probably should go for the one that's going to affect the 100 homes first. Yes, the other one is important as well, but we're going to have to eat this apple one bite at a time. And I don't want to jump ahead, but I know you were going to ask me about the bond vote that the city is going to put before all of you. So as voters of the city of St. Petersburg, you're going to be asked in November if you would allow us to do an extra tax on your property that we would use specifically to address our stormwater master plan. And so we're going to ask you all this question. And you're all going to make the decision if you want us to spend that money and you want us to do so in a much more rapid way. And I would say that before we ask the voters to do that, we should probably be able to tell you how we're going to prioritize. And so you're going to be seeing a lot more information about that that is going to be coming forward. City Council has not voted to put that on the ballot yet. But I do anticipate that we will sometime before the summer, and then you will start to be able to see a lot of information, educational, about the initiative. And I encourage you to plug in, ask questions, and if you believe that this is an issue that our city should be investing in, then you will have the opportunity to vote on that.
Thank you, and I appreciate all your work on that. And this is something that's a long time coming, and it's a long time in the making. What I wanted to add is to Brandy's point, we should expect more frequent flooding, more intense storms, and impacts in places that historically experienced them, that haven't, excuse me, historically experienced them. So in my opinion, based on the work that we've been doing and the research and our collaboration with the city and talking to different stakeholders, what needs to happen is invest in resilient infrastructure, update flood mapping and data systems. And that's what Storm Squad does. That's our area of expertise. And we look forward to partnering with the city and leveraging the tools and the research and the data that we build. Fund community-based response networks and integrate food, health, and housing into climate planning. Brandy is integral with the Tampa Bay Regional Planning Council. We also partner with them, and I believe that's part of the CCMP, correct? That will be in our comprehensive management plan, is integrating all these things. Thank you.
Christian, yeah, yes. I was going to ask if the insurance industry is ready for them.
Yeah, most definitely. And of course, you know, one of the most challenging aspects when you file an insurance claim is the scenario where there have been multiple claims on this specific property. So as we talk about more events potentially taking place in our area, it's so important that you save invoices, you save receipts, you document the repairs that you did make to your property. You know, if your insurance company pays for a garage door and you never replace that garage door, you happen to have another flood event, they're likely not to pay twice for that same item. So it's so important, as we talk about the potential for these events to still occur, is documenting all of the repairs, keeping a good record, taking photos. Photographic documentation is the best thing you can do on your claim before or after the loss occurs. So I think that's definitely one of the more challenging aspects when we deal with multiple claim events that have occurred on a property. So the more you can do, again, back to readiness to prepare for those things. You know, insurance companies, they're businesses, and, you know, they have criteria that needs to be met. And the better you can be to prepare yourself for that, the better your claim will go, the smoother that process will go.
All right, we've got time for one more. We're going to try to do a quick lightning round. Erica, if you could please, whenever it comes up, if you could please, you know, let them know how they could access the Storm Squad app.
Yes, we have a website, stormsquad.org. We left these QR codes here, and it's three different surveys. I believe one is about flooding and how to upload photos. One is about inflation and how your access to food and services are impacted before, during, and after a storm. And it's real useful information that helps us to collect this data. It helps us to share it with our city council, who's very interested in knowing more and learning more and helping us to put more cameras throughout various parts of the city. And I don't know if you want to, after I'm done, touch on that, but there's other neighborhoods besides the six that were identified by USF that have asked us for our assistance, like Shore Acres and a lot of other neighborhoods, the bridge, and places that having this technology and having this equipment is critical to saving the community and saving their neighborhoods.
And sorry, I didn't click it. Get the finish there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I definitely wanted to get that out there before we ran out of time. But I also wanted to ask everyone, you know, resilience work is complex and can be discouraging. And, you know, I wanted to know what motivates you to do this work. Mm-hmm. And in light of everything that we've talked about, are you still hopeful for the future?
You're looking at, you want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. I was like,
you go.
Okay, well, I would just say, I mean, it probably maybe sounds a little corny, but, you know, resiliency, it is a buzzword, right? I mean, it's a word that we use it interchangeably, we use it in a lot of different ways. I think what it comes down to for me is about the people that it affects. The district that I represent, and I've had the pleasure of representing for almost a decade, lies 95% within the coastal high hazard. Every single neighborhood that I represent, every single multifamily building, every single business, we're one of the largest business centers in the entire Tampa Bay area, was affected by Helene, and if you didn't get Helene, you got melted. And it's the people. It's not necessarily the buildings. Yes, we want to protect the buildings. We need to protect the buildings because all of our lives are in there, our people are in there. But it's the people. It's the people that have invested in our community, who have decided to make their lives here in St. Petersburg, raise their families, start their businesses. That is what keeps me going every single day. Because there are so many people who cannot do this work for themselves, but they love this city, they've grown up in this city, they've invested everything in their properties, And I believe that it is our job as city government to do everything that we can possibly do to make it as safe for them to continue to have a livelihood here as possible. Mm-hmm. And so that's what keeps me going every single day. And I will continue to fight that fight regardless of position or title until my last breath.
Okay. Yes.
And we'll go down the line, too.
Oh.
It's the people for me. One of the fondest memories I have after Helene was sitting in the back, kind of like backyard, looking out over the devastation, destruction with our neighbors and sharing a pizza. And, you know, our families kind of coming together and just knowing that, hey, we're going to get through this and having a laugh and starting to figure out, you know, what the next step is and not looking at everything and the dauntingness of it, but just knowing it's going to be one step at a time, and the next step, and eventually we'll get there. From a resiliency standpoint, we all invest a lot of time, money, and effort in our properties. We got to, because with climate's changing, we have to think about investing in our property in a different way, not just aesthetic upgrades, not just, you know, replacing things or landscaping. We got to think about every one of those components and how it can help mitigate against an event like Helene or Milton or the no-name storm or frankly all the storms you've had in the last 3 years. So a few things you can do, you can get a system like, you know, dam defense. You can get other temporary systems that are out there. You can put dry lock and put any sort of like water preventative paint on the exterior of your home. They make it in multiple colors, they make it clear. You know, little things like that are just going to help prevent water from getting in. You can look at your electrical boxes on your house. And you can find ways to basically seal those in. You can do a property inspection and see if there's areas of potential intrusion on your property. You can look at doors and potentially replace the doors with gaskets or doors that will seal tighter and help prevent water from coming in. You can invest in pumps. You know, like these are things that like investing in sandbags and plywood and doing that every time a storm hits, that's not the smart way to invest. It's backbreaking, it's time intensive, and it's expensive, and it just goes right out the door because you can use those things once and then they damage your property. We got to make smarter investments. Putting a sump pump in your garage or having pumps that with backup battery generators or, you know, connected to a generator that we can put in low-lying areas and leave running on with a hose that goes out a higher, like raised window just to keep water from building up in your home. These are little things you can think through, put a little bit of money in, you know, that means, hey, okay, we're not putting that tree in that we were thinking about doing, or like, I'll just mulch less this year, or don't do mulch, like frankly do hardscaping, because I can tell you, I mulched 5 days before and Helene washed it all away into my neighbor's yard. So rethinking how we protect and invest in our home, we can be more resilient as a community. We can make the, like, this isn't gonna be the last time it happens, so just make it less impactful the next time.
Absolutely. For me, it's also the people. Even in the middle of a storm, we saw neighbors checking on each other, sharing food, opening their homes, helping work on each other's homes. That's resilience in real time to me. What keeps me going also is knowing that if we actually invest in that, not just emotionally, but structurally, we can build communities that are not just surviving storms, but prepared for them. And then finally, the residents in your district, in all the districts, I've had the pleasure of helping to train residents to become flood leaders and community leaders and becoming resilience experts for their families, for their churches, for their neighbors. So seeing community residents rise up in leadership roles is, for me, a huge joy in this work, is seeing the next generation, our young people interested in resilience, asking questions, wanting to be trained on what it looks like. That's what keeps me going, is the future and leaving a legacy. What will our legacy be if we don't step up and handle this work?
Well, I hate to say it, but pretty much aligned with everyone on the panel in that. To me, it's really about the community. I was born and raised in St. Pete. I've lived here my whole life, and it's where I've chose to raise my family. As far as my motivation, I think, the opportunity as a public adjuster to take even one element of stress off of a homeowner's plate. As you mentioned, there's so many things that occur when these disasters strike. And, a lot of homeowners choose and should be focused on the things that are most important. Your belongings, your home. The insurance claims process is challenging, and it's not an easy process. And so for me, I take great pleasure and pride in getting to help homeowners through that process, not just maximizing their recovery, but helping to take the stress off of their plate in dealing with such a challenging, hard time. That's my motivation, what I do.
Very good.
One last thing I'll just mention. So I'm sure a lot of you have seen the Humvees that we have here. We have two more on the way. We're part of the Cajun Navy. So these Humvees will go from being used for deploying barriers to being used for search and rescue. They can clear 30 inches of water. It's one of the reasons we got them. So we can get to areas that are prone to flooding or the streets getting flooded maybe well in advance of a storm. If anyone here knows someone come the next storm that needs help or assistance, I would encourage you to direct them to call our number at Damage Defense. We will do our very best to get out there and get them if they can't get help from the city. Just so everyone knows, that's one of the things we'll be doing. We'll also have water and other supplies and materials here, turning Damage Defense into a safe haven for people during the storm. So, everyone mentioned the community aspect. I wanted to, let the community know this is, consider this home when disaster strikes.
Love it. I think my mic is off, but Christian, Erica, it's okay. Enrico.
Christian, Erica, Enrico, Councilmember Gabbard, thank you so much for sharing your opinions. You both are experts in your own way, and it was very valuable. And thank you all for listening to us, and enjoy. Oh, and in case Erica got cut off, although I know you have to be somewhere soon, I'm sure if you guys want to come up and ask her, Councilmember Gabbard, how you can get involved with Storm Squad, they would be able to help you. And then don't forget that there's QR codes to access the app as well.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Great job.
Yes.